Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, stick to my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person, the show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them, and the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Oh, well, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec at bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. Also my friends at rantradio.com. Tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays, my friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPods. Hi, everybody. It is 2 p.m. on Saturday, June 18th, 2005. This is show 102, and this is Joe Vecchio, and I'm happy you're here on the Cup of Joe radio show. I've got a guest with me in the studio. No, not my friend Phyllis, who's been on the last two out of the last three shows. This is my friend Dave from my old job at Siemens. How you doing, Dave?
Oh, doing great, Joe. How about you?
Pretty good, pretty good. And I wanted you to talk. Now, Dave is here helping me out because I had some trouble with my car. I put too much oil in the engine, and that's no good because when you drive, the car, the engine rattles and doesn't perform very well, and a lot of smoke belches out the back. You don't want that.
That's not very good at all.
So I'm going to change out the oil myself, and he took me over to the auto parts store to get the stuff that I needed, which is real cool. Friends help each other out. That's what friends do.
That's right.
And I wanted to talk with Dave about something because he had an incident in his life that there are political things that are going on that kind of go in touch with that. And you recently had a death in your family, your 17-year-old nephew who had cerebral palsy, who had been sick all his life pretty much. And he just recently passed away. And the Terry Schiavo case is back in the news again because they did the autopsy and they found that she had basically half a brain and that she was in fact blind, which means that Senator Frist, the Republican majority leader in the Senate, said that he had claimed he had seen videotapes of her and said that she seemed responsive to visual stimulus, which of course was now known not to be true. And he hasn't said anything to back down from that. So, and well, actually what he said was he never said that she reacted, which is bull because we've got it on videotape.
Exactly.
We've got it on audio tape. So he's just lying. And now Governor Bush out in Florida.
Genius.
Now, Dave, you may not even be aware of this, but Governor Bush has ordered the case of what happened 15 years ago with Terry Schiavo reopened.
Wonderful.
Because they're claiming that there's a discrepancy about why did it take him so long to call 911. You know, one of the things that the Schiavo's parents were saying was that he had abused her. And in the autopsy, there was no evidence of any kind of abuse whatsoever. She simply had a stroke of some sort. Her brain had shrunk to half its normal size, and she was basically a vegetable. Only alive because the part of her brain that kept her body functions going was running. Right. And I wanted to talk to Dave about this because when we talked on the phone yesterday, Dave, and Dave is a very strong Christian. I don't consider myself a Christian, okay? And Dave knows how I feel, and my wife knows how I feel, and I think they understand and respect my point of view because I'm not necessarily anti-Christian, although I'm certainly anti the people who are trying to use Christianity to control other people's lives and to rip them off, which unfortunately is really a profession older than prostitution because it goes back from the beginning. Before we had money, even. So my feelings about life and death are different from a lot of other people's feelings about life and death, and I wanted to talk to him about that because, you know, he talked about his nephew being at Michael. Was that his name, right?
Right.
Michael was his name, and he's in a better place now, and he's not suffering. I don't know. I'm not an expert on the afterlife. I don't claim to know anything one way or the other, and I'm not going to push that point of view. Hey, as far as I know, heaven and hell may be exactly the way it was described in Dante's Inferno, which was not a biblical book. It was written several hundred years after the Bible, and it's where we get most of our images from hell, by the way. A lot of people don't know that. The Bible doesn't speak about hell very, very much. Very little. It talks about a lake of fire, but basically that's about it. In Dante's Inferno, a lot of that imagery is given in more detail, but of course it was written many, many years after the Bible, centuries after. So it's not really the same exact thing. Do you think that your nephew is in heaven right now?
Oh, I know he's in heaven.
Yeah. Well, what about the situation, this whole culture of life thing? Okay, would you have preferred him to have just stayed if he had gone into a vegetative state like that? And knowing how full of life he is, would you have wanted him to continue on just being alive, even though you were fairly sure that he didn't have any real brain function, that his brain wasn't really alive?
Well, Joe, about a month ago when he first got into the hospice, my mom naturally had a difficult decision to make, and they couldn't do anything else for him at Eccleston. So she made that difficult decision, and when he first got there, you know, I told her that, you know, she's done all she can, and the people at Eggleston did all they can because they were stumped, and his organs was basically falling apart.
So he was on a feeding tube of some sort.
Exactly.
And she ordered it removed.
Right.
Was Michael aware of this?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Michael had his blessing went with that, or he agreed with that.
Well, we're pretty sure because I think he realized we done all we could for him, considering the fact because he's been getting progressively worse, you know, ever since he's been born, you know, until, you know, just recently. So, you know, I basically just asked the Lord to give me that acceptance and the strength to let go when and if it happened, you know, either sooner or later. But in the answer to your question, I would rather him, you know, just like he went in peace, because I didn't want him to suffer anymore. And that was one of my prayers, just, God, you know, if it's within your will, just go on and take him. You know, don't let him suffer, because he suffered on his way in life. I didn't want him to suffer on his way out.
Right. And from what you told me, his last words were he was very peaceful, and he went in peace. So,
one
comedian talked about, you know, people who committed suicide are going to death, and he said being dead is one thing; it's getting dead that people are afraid of. Are you afraid of death? Are you afraid to die?
Me myself, no, because when it comes for me, it's nothing I can do about it. It mm-hmm. can come today. You know, it can come after I step out, you know, this
sure.
house talking to you.
Sure.
But, you know, it's nothing really you can prepare for. Only thing you have to do is just, you know, prepare yourself daily. You know, make your peace with God and whoever else you have issue with, and just live your life the best you can.
Well, I, for one, know, believing what I believe and not – and when I say I'm not a Christian, what I mean by that is that I do not want Jesus Christ in that sense to take over total control of my life.
Right.
I don't feel, it's my own personal opinion, I don't feel that that's what God really wants. But again, you can't really tell. And all I can hope for is that if there is a judgment after life, if there is some sort of, you know, look at that, that God will look and say, I understand how you feel. After all, I created you this way.
Right.
And I can talk openly and honestly about all of my faults. And I'm not claiming to be a perfect person. You listen to a lot of radio shows, especially on the right. They'll sit there and they'll tell you that they're more moral than you are, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to say that because I'm not a more moral person than anybody. I've had my share of problems, too. Thankfully, I haven't had any serious problems in terms of drug abuse. I'm very faithful to my wife. Whatever sexual issues that I might have in one way, shape, or form, I am honest with myself, and it certainly don't let it affect anybody else. In other words, whatever they are, they're internal. I don't go out and, you know, rape little girls or rape little boys or something like that.
Right.
But I'm not a perfect person.
No one is.
But I can look myself in the mirror and be honest with myself about who I am and forgive myself for my own faults. And I think if I can forgive myself, then God or Jesus or whoever can find that forgiveness too, because if they know everything there is to know about me, they can't know any more about me than I know about myself, or I can't know any more. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, but, you know, for your nephew, who was, I guess, about as innocent a person as you can get, considering that, you know, he really couldn't do anything, you know, the idea of them having some sort of happiness in a life after we've passed on this physical form is certainly a pleasurable thing. And I certainly hope that if there is a heaven, he is up there and happy. And, you know, an atheist believes very strictly that there isn't anything after life. When you're dead, and that's it.
Right.
And they may be true, I don't know. You know, I mean, they claim Jesus came back from the dead, but I just know how people are. So people could have been, you know, BSing about that all the time. But, you know, if you want to believe that, that's great, as far as I'm concerned. But it does bother me when politicians take issues like this and use them for political gain, which is what the Republicans did in the Schiavo case and are still doing in the Schiavo case. The parents of the parents of the girl are still not satisfied. They think, in fact, they're claiming that the doctors who performed the autopsy were lying.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it seems to me that they refuse to. And I don't understand why they don't just let go. I mean, I was watching an episode of MASH the other day, and they had one where they had one boy who was going to die, one soldier who was going to die, but he needed an arterial
transplant. Right, I remember that one.
Yeah, they needed an aorta, basically.
Right.
And there was another guy who was brain dead, basically, but his body functions were still going. And they were waiting for him to die so that they could take his aorta and put it in the other guy.
Right.
And the guy's buddy was furious. How dare you treat him like a piece of meat? And the doctor told the guy, said, look, all the parts of your friend that made him what he was died a long time ago. His body just doesn't know it yet. So it really concerns, you know, what is the point when you should be alive or should be dead? And you can take that back from the beginning too. Are you, when a sperm meets an egg, is that a human life? Is it right from that point there? Because if that's the case, then, you know, there are all sorts of implications for that. And when my wife and I talk about this, and we get into some heated discussions about it because she was almost aborted, so it's a very, very personal issue for her. But I look at it from a point of view of, if you have a situation like that and suppose someone has a miscarriage, which happens. I mean, miscarriages happen. I don't know how often they happen, but they do happen. And do you treat that as a murder investigation? Because it has been known for a woman to intentionally try to cause a miscarriage.
Right.
Even if they're not, you know, the woman's, the movement for the pro-choice movement is a coat hanger, the symbol of that, because that's what women used to use, coat hanger, to go in there and try to kill the baby off, which resulted in a lot of death because of that. But there are other methods that they attempted anyway. You can overexert yourself and lose the baby. So, is that the route that you want to go? And these are important issues because they deal with life and death and everything. And I don't know. I wish I had all the answers.
Yeah, so. We always, Joe. I mean, that's just part of life, man. My sister is a perfect example, right? Because down through the years, she had plenty and every opportunity to be in my nephew's life, her son's life. But for some reason, her and her and the father of the child, Preston, chose not to do that. You know, just chose to, you know, curse out my mom, downrate her, and I, you know, say we were against her, and now using her son against her, and now this basically took her son away. But what she failed to realize that it was for the good, because had he stayed in that situation, he would have been gone a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because she didn't have the means or that responsible, you know, backbone, you know, to take care of him.
Yeah, some people are like that. I know that I couldn't handle it.
Exactly.
I'll say that straight out. I couldn't handle anything like that. I could barely handle Kathy's kids. and they're young and healthy and strong. Mm-hmm. So how I would handle something like that, I really don't think. I'm not the most responsible person in the world. And Kathy's always said that she's sorry that she can't have children by me, you know, that she can't bear me a child. But, you know, I'm not sure I can handle.
Right. It's a lot of responsibility,
yeah,
man.
I mean, I'm very irresponsible. And I'm irresponsible enough to not be working and not just accept any job, even when we're in the situation where we're at.
Right.
So, but at least I recognize that. And I don't want to speak bad of your sister, because she's not here to defend herself.
Right. Right.
So, but she obviously, she had her own choices to make, and you had your choices to make. And obviously, if you were just, you know, you couldn't just wash your hands of the whole incident, and you couldn't just leave your nephew
in
that situation. So you and your mother took it upon yourself to do what you felt was necessary for your nephew.
Right.
So, and I hate to say it in this sense, but at least, you know, you no longer have the burden of caring for him now, because that was a lot of work. You had to really it took a big chunk of your time in order to take care of this young man.
It was a worthwhile endeavor, let me tell you. And just let me add that the day before, which was my sister's birthday, the 16th, I, you know, met her face-to-face. It was just she and I, and, you know, I forgave her, you know, for not being there for him, you know, for all the bad things that she said or done to both me and my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, and you know, just basically said that, you know, we're family, and I think this is what Michael wants, because he's been a fighter all his life,
right?
But he was particularly fighting hard for something, and I think that was it, because even though he may not have, you know, felt things the way you or I have, Or your wife Kathy does, but he still can sense things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for that reason and that reason alone, he waited around so he can hear that.
Right.
And once he heard that, I guess his spirit was like, well, that's what I need to hear. So now I can just let go and go on in peace.
And whatever happens afterwards, I hope you know, he's no longer suffering. And if there is such a thing as reincarnation, I hope he at least comes back in a healthy body.
Oh yeah.
You know,
he's gonna be fine.
The New Agers believe, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. I'm not saying I'm a New Ager, but the New Agers believe that we are in reality spiritual beings who choose to manifest ourselves in physical form as a learning process. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't jive with me, like why you forget everything between lifetimes. Maybe there's something greater than memory that constitutes what we really are, but I really don't understand that part of it, which is why I'm not a New Ager. I'll be honest, I've never bought the heaven hell stuff. Whatever I believe about Jesus and what he had to say, and I look at Jesus more of as a philosopher and as a philosophy of life, as opposed to, you know, do this because otherwise God will punish you. I've never bought into supernatural stuff. I'm sorry. It's
right.
Just that's not in my nature.
Yeah.
But I agree with a lot of things of what Jesus had to say, and I hate it when people do things in his name that really contradict what he talked about. And this the whole culture of life thing really annoys me, because the same people who were screaming bloody murder about Terri Schiavo and that how she should be kept alive at all costs will do nothing for someone who is already alive, that they can help themselves to a certain extent. Like, exactly. Like for example, they'll talk about abortion, but as soon as the child is born, they're against any kind of government spending on health care or anything that will help the child out. I'm sure if we had had more, because cerebral palsy is one of those things that could possibly be cured through stem cell research, and they're against any kind of studying for that because they're afraid that people will have eggs and sperm and basically give them up just for the purpose of stem cell research. And it's like, look, you're just talking about even a fertilized human egg. And when you do in vitro fertilization, which is what a couple does because they want to have a child, you always have more fertilized eggs than you actually use. Are these things living human beings? And can you, if you can't use them in order to get stem cells so you cure Alzheimer's or cerebral palsy or some of these other genetic things, wouldn't that be more in tune with the culture of life? You know, so it's a tough call. It's a tough call, and it's a big, complicated issue. I, for one, you know, I wish we would just pick a point and say, at this point, it is not a human life, and at this point, it is a human life, and if it is a human life, it deserves all the rights and everything else that every other human life has. Right. Some people believe that starts when the baby is breathing on its own outside of the mother's womb. Other people believe it starts the second of conception, and you know, maybe the answer is somewhere in between, or at least a compromise where we won't be killing each other over the issue. You know, but it seems hypocritical to me to say one thing, to treat an unborn person one way and someone who's alive another way, saying, well, we don't really care anymore. You know, all the programs, prenatal care, and all the things that will help you lead not just to be alive, but to lead a more healthful and fulfilling life. We're against that because it's against our ideology that anybody but your immediate family should do anything to help you out.
Right.
So.
Right. It's definitely a tough call, Joe. And just to go back to your earlier point about belief in heaven and hell, because we had this discussion many times, you know, while we're working at Siemens, mm-hmm. and, you know, even after sometimes. And, you know, I can understand, you know, why, you know, some people, you know, doubt the existence of God because, I mean, you just read your paper each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day something's going on. Somebody's getting killed either in Iraq, maybe the Sudan, you know, in some other areas, you know, and it's like, why, God? Why? What? Where are you?
Right.
You know, and I can definitely understand the frustration because, you know, sometimes my spirit gets troubled. But, you know, me, myself, I just meditate, you know, on the fact that, you know, it's not going to be like this. Right. I mean, it's not going to stay constant.
You know, the truth is, that's not where my doubt comes from, though. I mean, I know that, you know, I can even justify the suffering that goes on as part of a greater plan that God has.
Right.
In that sense. I have a very straightforward mind. I don't believe in anything that I can't prove, you know? And that doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't exist. It's just that I have to be convinced in some other way, because all the supernatural things that people talk about can be explained in other ways. See what I'm saying? And everybody has their own different viewpoints on what that other way is. And I can't push myself to believe one particular thing. Maybe it's all interconnected. You know, maybe, you know, I don't believe there is any one true correct religion. I don't think Christians are any more correct than Muslims or Buddhists or anything like that. Maybe it's part of a greater whole that we still don't understand yet.
Could be.
So, you know, that's really the way I look at it, that there's pain and suffering in the world. Hey, that's human nature. You know, humans haven't changed in 2,500 years. I just brought up on the blog, I brought up the Melian dialogues, and I don't want to get into that too much. Just read the post. But basically, the Athenians were greedy for power, and because they were greedy for power, they overstretched and were conquered. And we're seeing that same attitude now. Human beings really haven't changed that much, you know. And I'm going to be talking about that at some time in the future because I've been thinking about some sort of moneyless society or how we can accomplish things without money. But that's a topic for another discussion.
Right.
I got to cut you short here because it's time to go. We're going to hear from our friends at BuzzFlash.com. Dave, I want to thank you very much for being on the show and talking about this.
Thanks for having me,
Joe. And you know, we'll talk about this because life and death, you know, how we treat these issues are very, very important.
Oh, most definitely.
And And it's something that people need to sit back and reflect upon a little more, not just react, you know. And I think a lot of the fundamentalists are just afraid of doing something that will make God punish them for it. And I think God is a lot more forgiving than that. I think, if, you know, if they would have just stopped what they were doing and say, this is in God's hands, let God take care of it, the world would be a much better place. Because that type of faith, that type of fear that God is going to punish you, that's what lets people fly airplanes into buildings. You know, that's what it leads to. So, all right, we'll be back with more. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. You can't get much more hypocritical than abruptly and unilaterally ending a congressional hearing about abuses of civil liberties. But then again, if you're a Republican like James Sensenbrenner Jr., chair of the House Judiciary Committee, there's always room to increase your threshold of hypocrisy. And on Friday, June 10th, Sensenbrenner did just that. You see, he gaveled shut a hearing about Bushevik abuses of what we call the Unpatriot Act because he thought such issues were irrelevant. Of course, it was most likely a call from the White House that precipitated Sensenbrenner's imitation of a tin horn dictator. After the Republican Majority Counsel for the Judiciary shut off the microphones, one of the witnesses testifying told the GOP a thing or two about democracy. James Zogby of the Arab American Institute lamented, quote, I think as we are lecturing foreign governments about the conduct of their behavior with regard to opposition, when I see the behavior I saw here today as an American, I'm really troubled about what kind of lesson this is going to teach to other countries in the world about how they ought to conduct an open society that allows for an opposition with rights. I'm sorry. I'm very offended. As he should be. Sensenbrenner, a portly beerhouse thug for the Bushevics, recently waxed indignant in a letter to Howard Dean. Sensenbrenner wrote to the Democratic chair the following complaint. I sincerely hope you refrain from further personal attacks. These attacks are contrary to the passionate but respectful political debate the public deserves. Have you stopped laughing yet? We have. Remember, it's democracy that you see being dismantled before your very eyes. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Oof. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, I want to thank all my listeners, especially at White Rose Society. And I want to give kudos to my friend Ben Birch there because he helped set up a little fundraiser for me that's been helping me out a little bit financially. Still nowhere near out of a hole in any way, shape, or form, although I am at least got a couple of dollars in the bank now and I can pay a bill or two. But go on the site, www.whiterosesociety.org, if you want to hear archives of not just my show, but Mike Malloy, and Randy Rhodes, and Tom Hartman, and Tony Tripiano, and then a whole bunch of others. They're all up there. And by the way, I found out from one of the people who donated some money that Mike Malloy gave me a shout-out. So I appreciate that, Mike. You know, I worked for Mike for a short time, and he was a good boss. And he went up to – it was between the time where he was let go by WSB here and when he went up to work in Chicago, a real city. But he's on Air America now. And he gave me a shout-out, which was nice for me to hear. So, and Ben, of course, is doing me a great service by helping me out. So go, and, you know, don't just donate to me if you can afford it. Donate to Ben, too, because what he does is vitally important in keeping all these archives together. So that's a big deal. The Michael Jackson trial finally ended, and he was acquitted on
all charges. He may face a civil suit. We'll see. God knows these people are not going to stop. But I'm kind of glad it was over. It was one of those things where I don't think you'll ever know the whole truth of the matter, but the actual fact is that the prosecutor was obviously obsessed with getting Michael Jackson. And, one of the reports I read about it, because, I avoid this stuff like the plague. A lot of the other radio show hosts, they really get into this stuff. And me, I'm like, look, it's all kind of neither here nor there for me, because it really doesn't affect how I live my life and what things happening. But I know it's big news, and a lot of people follow it. And it's the subject of a lot of talk, and I wanted to get my two cents in on it. Michael Jackson's celebrity, some people are saying, is a shield for him, but it's also – it's like a chain, because you never know when something like this is going to happen. You don't know if the accusations against him are true or not, simply because there's plenty of people out there who would be perfectly willing to put Mr. Jackson in jail or to sue him for no reason just because they want a few extra dollars. It's my personal opinion. And obviously I don't have any psychological facts to back this up, but it's my personal feeling that we would have a lot less of this if people earned enough money to make a decent living on their own, if they didn't require millions and millions of dollars to break out of the cycle of not necessarily poverty, but helplessness that working people feel on a regular basis because they simply do not earn enough money to get by. And not as much as what used to be made. A guy who worked a job like I worked at Siemens back in the 50s and 60s and stuff, that a job like that, you could raise an entire family on that. You can buy a house and you can live fairly well. You weren't going to have millions. You were never going to own a huge mansion. No, but you know what? A lot of people don't need a huge mansion. It's not necessary. I'm not saying the desire to have one is wrong, or that there's something wrong in and of itself with having or wanting a bigger place. But the truth of the matter is, it's not a necessity of life, and you can still live a fairly comfortable life without having a huge mansion, So, and I look at houses and stuff, and when I'm driving by, and I look at nice cars, and I think, I'll never be able to get to that point again. I don't understand what it takes to make that kind of money, when it used to be just a regular construction style job was good enough for that. So. But that's my feeling on it. I think if people made enough money, there would be a lot less of these lawsuits going around. Was Michael Jackson really guilty? I guess we'll never really know, because the whole thing was tainted, in my opinion, from the beginning by the fact that there was somebody out for some money. And if they go ahead and do a civil suit – and they always said – they were saying that it wasn't about getting money for Michael Jackson. It was about punishing him for his crimes or whatever. Now we'll see if they want to punish him by taking some money away. So – I got a lot of respect for Michael Jackson, and I got a lot of sympathy for him simply because of the type of life that he grew up in. He had no childhood, and it's very difficult for him. So, and whether he's really guilty or not, if another case comes to court and they actually get a conviction, then that's a different story. But until then, you have to assume that he's innocent. And I understand the Fox people were screaming at him, and then Nancy Grace on CNN, a show that I have never watched, by the way, who apparently is under the impression of that if you're accused, that's guilty in her eyes. Maybe unless you're a rich Republican, I don't know, but she apparently had popped a vein of some sort, was so angry at this decision, especially since a lot of them were predicting that because the jury was out so long that Michael was going to get convicted. So, but at any rate, he was acquitted. And it kind of sort of brings me to a topic that I want to talk about, because we were discussing this in the Bart Cop chat room. BartCop.com is one of my favorite blogs that I read. I guess you shouldn't call it a blog. He was actually doing a site long before there were blogs. He just does a daily site, well, mostly daily. Every now and then he misses a day or so, but that's fine. You got to take some time off. He does a radio show. You have to pay for his, but that's okay. I think it's well worth it if you can afford it. But he has there's a little chat room for the people who are fans of Bart Cop. And we were talking about the whole revenge thing, because a lot of people want to get revenge against Michael Jackson, which is weird because Michael Jackson has never really done anything to anybody unless the stories about him being a pedophile are true. But there are a lot of people who would really just want to see him punished for no good reason other than he's rich and he's a little weird by our standards. And, you know, we got the usual questions about what would happen if, you know, some guy was raping your wife and stuff like that. Look, I'll say this. I love my wife very much. And if I came home one day and somebody had broken in and was attacking her, I'd go crazy. I'd beat up on the guy. And if I had to, I would kill them. I mean, that's my gut reaction, and that's what I would do. But once that person was subdued, and once that person was incapable of harming somebody, like in jail or stuff like that, for me, that's where that ends. There's a big difference to me between doing something that you have to do in self-defense and the immediacy of the moment and what you can do when you have somebody helpless and at your mercy. It's how you react when you have that power over somebody that's much more important. And I'm just not into the revenge thing. To me, it doesn't solve anything. You can't if someone is mean and rotten and nasty and kills somebody, killing them is not going to bring that person back. As much as I would like to, I mean, if there was a perfect sense of justice, I guess then it might be a different situation where if you kill that person, the person he killed came back to life. And I listen to some people who talk about getting revenge against Mr. Bush and his administration for all the nasty things. I'm not into that. You know, what's that? To me, that's something for a court to decide. That's something, you know, if he ever gets brought up on war crimes trials, which I sincerely doubt, which I certainly want to see it, but I sincerely doubt it's going to happen. Powerful people like that very rarely get held accountable for what they do. But I would be perfectly happy if he would just go back to his ranch and, you know, sit home and watch TV all day, as far as I'm concerned, so long as he stops messing with me. That's really all I care about, and that's my whole desire, is to prevent him and his friends from ruining and or running my life. And that's really the point of it for me. I don't get into revenge much. Revenge doesn't do anything for me. Stop them from doing. Other people have different feelings about it, and I respect that. But when you get to a point, to me, when you start talking about killing people or doing things like that, and sometimes I get angry enough where I feel that way. I'm not lying. I'm not, as I said earlier, I'm not perfect. I'm not more moral than anybody else. I think it's just wrong to go after somebody who can't fight back and to just go after for the sake of revenge. There's justice and there's revenge, and I'm in favor of justice. You can call me weak-kneed. You can call me, you know, a wimp if you want, but I just think it's wrong. The strong shouldn't take advantage of the weak. That's how I feel. And I'm not a Christian, but I'm told that that's a fairly Christian attitude. Would you consider that to be a Christian attitude? Yeah, my wife's shaking her head. Yeah. But, you know, I don't look at it from that point of view. I look at it, you know, you can't take advantage of these situations. Republicans would. They think, in fact, that if you think along those lines that there's something wrong with you, if you're given the opportunity to strike back at somebody, you should. And when the Republicans took back power, you know, they could have said, see, we've done this, and now we can act in a mature manner and run the country the way we think is right, but understanding and respecting the notions that the country was founded upon, you know, minority rights and stuff like that. But it's obvious they're not interested in that. And by now, I would think it would be true to even the most hardcore supporters that something is wrong. Something is terribly wrong with that picture. So, but to the people I was talking to in the chat room, hey, I'm sorry if it makes me seem like a wuss to you, but that's how I feel. I'm not into revenge, man. Revenge doesn't do anybody any good. You know, just like with fundamentalist religion, revenge is what makes people fly buildings into airplanes. Timothy Vivet was airplanes in the buildings. If someone flies a building into an airplane, that would be a cool trick, though. I'd pay to see that. See, here I have my own radio show, and I can't even get three damn words straight. But if someone were to fly a building into an airplane, that would be a trick. But professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. See, and you people who donated to me, don't you feel stupid now? I gave this guy $5. He doesn't even know what the hell he's talking about. Hey, Marge, listen to this. He said he was going to fly a building into an airplane. Yeah. Anyway, revenge is not my deal, man. And I don't recommend anybody going out and get it. I mean, the Israelis and the Palestinians have been fighting each other over revenge for years and years. I think the Irish have finally stopped that. It takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of lot of willpower to put an end to that stuff, but I think they finally managed it over an island, and it's wonderful. And that was, of course, due to the efforts of Bill Clinton. He wasn't the only one. He doesn't deserve total credit, of course, but he deserves a great deal of it because he worked so hard for it, and the Irish people recognize that, which is why Bill Clinton can go to Ireland and be treated as a hero there. Blowjobs notwithstanding. Whereas Mr. Bush, I doubt Mr. Bush will ever be able to set foot in Iraq without being completely surrounded by concrete bunker. You're not going to be able to see Mr. Bush just driving around out in the open in Iraq anytime soon, I can tell you that. Because they'll want to get revenge on him. And then we'll want to get revenge on them. It's a never-ending cycle. So that's my take on that. And it's been a short segment. We're going to have another short segment before we end it, and we're going to take a little break. And we'll be back with some more. Sam, play us out.
The Papa Joe Radio Show will be right back.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, let me thank my listeners at White Rose Society, at WNY Media, and at Rant Radio. All of my listeners there, and of course, everybody listening in at the blog and on your iPods. I hope you're having a good day. It is 6:52 p.m. on Monday, June 20th, and I'm recording this so I can get it ready for Rant Radio's Monday. They switched me over to Monday from Sunday. It doesn't really bother me that much, one way or the other, so long as they let me know so I can keep everything up to date. Rant Radio is pretty cool, even though there are a bunch of right-wingers over there. I've been hearing more often than usual, or I wouldn't bring it up, but I've been hearing about how the polls are looking our way and about how my crazy right-wing relative is finally coming around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, this is a good thing. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. This is a good thing. And, of course, it means we should keep fighting because it means that we're finally starting to get our message across, or, you know, the craziness of what's going on is finally starting to catch up to people. And, you know, like I said, we should keep fighting. But you know, this is my semi-regular reminder that while things are improving, or at least have the appearance of improving, we still have a long way to go. I mean, I don't have any doubt that eventually the Bush people, the neocons, all of them, the wacko fundamentalists, they're all eventually going to collapse under the weight of their own lies. But like I always do, I want to ask, what then? When the time comes, we need to be ready to step in. I mean, it's not enough to cast ourselves as the not Republicans. And it really has more to do to saying, well, Democrats need to find out what they stand for. No, you don't have to, you're misunderstanding what I'm saying here, if you're thinking that way. We've got to give people a reason to vote for us, okay? People who still support this administration and its ludicrous policies are addicted to what Mike Lukovich, who was a brilliant columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, in fact, about the only decent thing they've got going on in that paper, he's calling it failure fries. Because they had the whole freedom fries. What they're eating is failure fries, folks. Now, you know, I know, and I'm pretty sure that election rigging is going to continue, as it has. But eventually, sooner or later, it's going to get to the point where election rigging isn't even really going to work. The only way they've succeeded with rigging the elections is because the results have been, for the most part, too close. In other words, if the poll margins are 20 or 30% in favor of us as opposed to, say, 4 or 5%. You know, if the exit polls say that, or if the general mood of the country in the polls is that, and then the elections come in and these guys are winning 51 to 49, more people are going to sit back and say, wait a minute, this is not right. And I made it clear while the 2004 campaign was going on that if Kerry was going to get into the White House, he was going to need 70 to 80% of the popular vote. Well, maybe not that much, but at least 60 to 70% in order to overcome all the fraud that was going to go on. I believed it then, and I believe it now. I believe there was fraud in Ohio, and I believe that Kerry did win Ohio. But my comment had always been not that Kerry wouldn't win the election, but that Kerry would never get into the White House. There's an important distinction there that I want everybody to understand. Now, the poll numbers, though, the 60, 70%, these are attainable numbers. I mean, the president's disapproval rating is up around 60% now. And that's pretty high. His approval rating is damn low. You know, it's not maybe not 60%. It's like in the high 50s, and his approval ratings are in the low 40s. And that's very, very bad for a president in this situation. And it is, in fact, the lowest poll ratings a president has had at this time in his career, since they've been taking these polls. But at any rate, we have to be ready. Jello Biafra talked about that in Wake Up and Smell the Noise. He said, we have to be ready. When the South African government fell, the apartheid government fell there, there were people ready to step up. When the country almost collapsed in the wake of the Great Depression, there were people who were ready to step up. The New Dealers were ready to step up. We have to be ready for that. And I've got some ideas on that, and I want to bring them out to you. And, you know, it might all be bullshit because, you know, hey, I'm just this guy with a radio show. I'm not college educated. I'm not a big bright guy or nothing. I just got some general ideas here. Okay, so this is what I think, and you can make of it what you will. Domestically, I think we have to make the obvious point that if we don't clamp down on the political power of corporations, they'll be running our lives and doing a far worse job of it than the government ever did. How many people do you know, of all my listeners, even if you're a right-winger, look around, how many people do you know whose lives have improved economically over the last few years? Not many people are falling into that bracket. Even those people who make fairly decent money are kind of a little worried. And, of course, that could end for them in a heartbeat. People have a real good job could wind up losing it, just like that. And then be stuck almost in the same situation I'm in. Maybe not that bad because they probably are more responsible with money than I am and have managed to save some. But, you know, it's certainly plausible that people who are doing very well now could find themselves in a very bad economic situation. The truth of the matter is, as it stands, most of the really, really big corporations in this country are run for the most part by a bunch of greedy bastards who would steal your kids' candy just because they can. And it's not a difficult case to make because, well, it's true. They just indicted a couple of which company was it? I forget which one, but they just indicted a couple that are actually going to do some jail time. Obviously, they didn't donate enough money to the Republican Party because the ones that caused the real serious problems, the people like Ken Lay, they're running around free and living very good lives, I might add. And even though I'm not into the vengeance thing, I'm not. They still deserve to be punished for their crimes. I mean, that's not punishment. That's justice. That's not revenge. That's justice. It is punishment. You know. You can even talk about the jobs moving to Mexico, which is what happened to my job. But instead of playing the race card, which is what the Republicans would do, you know, they'll simply say, well, you know, they're Mexicans. They're stealing our jobs. No. The Mexicans aren't stealing our jobs. The Mexicans aren't that much different from us, ladies and gentlemen. Neither were the French or the Irish or the British or the Russians or the Iraqis or the Iranians. Most working people are working people. They're working people first and whatever else second. And they wanted the same. They want the same stuff for their life as we want in ours. They want to be able to support themselves, raise their families, and hopefully give a better life to their children than they had. There's different religions, there's different ways of understanding or different ways of thinking what success is, but that's really what they mostly want. No, it's not the fault of the Mexicans that the jobs are moving to Mexico. It's the fault of the corporate executives who are moving them there just so that they can make a few more dollars. God knows they're not losing any money on the deal. Their paychecks aren't going to go down anymore. You know? And that's the truth. Don't play the race card, man. Play the class card. Play the class card, because that's really what the struggle is all about in the long run. Marx was right in that. He was wrong in a lot of things. He was wrong with most of the things. although I understand why he wrote what he wrote, because I understand what the economic circumstances were in Central Europe at that time, but he was wrong in his conclusions. It's a class war. That's what's going on. And they accuse us of doing it when we just want to have some equality, or at least equality of opportunity, instead of stratifying it. Even Alan Greenspan said that the widening gap between rich and poor is hurting this country. And he's hardly a socialist. He's an Ayn Rand, objectivist, as a matter of fact. So, foreign policy, I think we should just make it pretty clear. And again, this is an obvious point. This is not even a point we have to fight to make, that the entire we can kick your ass foreign policy has been a big disaster. It's been a huge disaster. Look at the fact that no one wants to get out there and fight this war is proof of that. Military recruitment is way, way down. Even parents are stepping up and saying, you know, we don't want our kids fighting. I'm hearing stories about even people who are hardcore Republicans who have children of age. They're trying to keep their kids out of that. Of course, you know, I don't understand if they're going to still vote Republican or not. If they do, they're morons. Although I can understand them not voting for Democrats, because the Democrats have a long way to go, and I'm not, you know, there's no argument with me in that regard. We've still got a long way to go, but we're in the right direction. But the thing about it is, people are voting with their feet. People aren't going into the service, they're staying away in droves, as Mel Brooks would say. Now, the 101st Fighting Keyboarders, the right-wing bloggers who scream bloody murder for war, 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 kill, 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 we don't see their asses signing up. It's because they're cowards. The only wars they love are the wars they don't have to fight in. It's like John Wayne and all those other warmongering assholes who sit there and show how glorious and wonderful war is. Yeah, yeah, I know. My wife is sitting there thinking, he didn't always show that. He showed war. But you know something? John Wayne never fought in any war. John Wayne never saw a minute's worth of combat. Neither did Ronald Reagan. They never saw combat, man. Say what you will about John Kerry. When push came to shove, not only did he served in a damn dangerous spot. You know, Governor Dean is doing the right thing. He's building the party up slowly but surely. And he's doing it at the local thing. He understands politics is local. Most politics is local. We still got a long way to go. I'm not saying this is going to happen overnight, you know. But it's true that I think, at any rate, it's true that he's doing the right thing. And if we do take these people down, you know, a political victory is still not out of the question. I'm skeptical that it's going to happen because, frankly, these people are fanatics. And they'll probably react to losing by doing something really, really stupid. I mean, I still believe that they intentionally allowed, to a certain extent, 9/11 to happen. Maybe they didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but they allowed it to happen because they knew it would be good for them politically. You know, and people who are capable of that, and people who are capable of justifying torture like they are pretty bad. So I think we should try to push them into that anyway. Oh, geez, look at the clock. I got to get out of here. But anyway, Dr. Dean's doing the right thing. Everything will be okay in the long run. Don't sweat it too much, but keep fighting. Keep fighting. I got to go. Till next time, this is Joe Vecchio signing off. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John, don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George, I'll sip a mug of Doug, with the creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do everything, open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
of steel, a mug of Doug, a cup of